Hello, my friends, and welcome back to the 1955 Kahlua Study Group. This is Chapter 32, Inner Realization. Now, this chapter is nothing new. We should have learned this already throughout this study. But we'll begin with Joel talking about the discords and the inharmonies of human existence can be met and overcome by a spiritual power. And as many times as the discovery of this spiritual power has been made, the practice of it has been lost. Well, why and how is it possible for it to be lost? It's because by the time the second generation of students comes along, the teaching becomes a teaching of the mind. The students are looking for harmony, supply, or health because of statements of truth that they read or hear. And it is on that premise that the power is lost. Scripture taken into the mind, read, memorized, repeated, is not spiritual power. Scripture has to be spiritually understood, spiritually discerned, before it can result in the power that brings peace. It makes no difference whether students repeat scriptural passages, scientific statements, or affirmations. All this remains as an activity of the human mind, and the activity of the human mind is not spiritual power. So the students are perpetuating the very error that will eventually take the teaching off of the earth again. Because no one can impart truth to the mind. No one. Now, I see this very thing happening in the infinite way, don't you? There was five teachers in Chicago up on the platform one time with Joel there. That would probably be the first generation, right? Such students as Virginia and Lorraine and perhaps Herb. There were a few others, of course. I believe there was a Dorothy out there in California. Anyway, there was the first generation of teachers. Now we're to the second, maybe the third generation of teachers. And I ask you really point blank, do you see any evidence of that spiritual power operating through anyone? I mean anyone. Is there anybody rising up? Not of themselves, of course, but through the attainment of the spiritual power flowing through them, where they have a student body that's becoming worldwide. Do you see this spiritual power working anywhere? No. No, I don't either. And so that tells me we're on the verge of this great discovery being lost on earth again. And it's very strange because we know that Joel had a vision of enough of us attaining this spiritual power. And of course, you know, it's not something you attain personally. It's something you surrender to that uses you. But he had a vision of enough of us having that spiritual power working through us, that there would be a circle of Christhood so that anyone anywhere could reach out and get the help they needed and get the growth, the spiritual realization they needed. His vision was so that this would never again be lost off of the earth. And you and I are standing on the edge of watching it be lost off the earth. And how many thousands of years will it be this time? Or will it be so far forgotten that human beings destroy each other and destroy this planet? I don't have the answer to that. But I know there is something called the 1955 Kailua Study Series. And I know that if this study series is really taken seriously and entered into, and we allow it to enter into us, perhaps it'll not fall into obscurity again. Perhaps we can have that circle of Christhood if enough people will practice this. And so I feel it very important, more than you will ever know, that this message get out there, where those who can practice it to the point of receptivity, to the point of making contact, are able to hear it. Because many, like myself, went through a lot of years and never heard this. So I don't know how it's going to go, but I have done my little bit, and it's up to God. And up to you, if you'll practice. That part's not even up to God. It's not up to God to turn within 12 times a day until that contact is made. That's up to you. So maybe I should rephrase that and say, I've done my little bit, and now it's up to you. Well, there are many so-called teachers, and you have heard some say, oh, I can't heal, but I can teach beautifully. And you know now, that isn't true. That isn't true. Teachers who are not healing are not teaching, because teaching has nothing to do with the letter of truth. It has to do with the impartation of the actual consciousness of truth. In other words, you must be standing in the conscious awareness of that spiritual power and presence in order to impart it. If you have never made the contact yourself, you can type up these words and have them letter perfect. We read that online, don't we? I think by now you're all beginning to feel like I am. You can feel when there's consciousness behind what is typed and when it's just the words, can't you? That's called spiritual discernment, and we're all getting that. So he says, there are many practitioners who know the words in the books. Some of them can give a treatment intelligently, correctly, as far as the letter is concerned, and then they wonder that nothing happens, or so little. It's because they haven't yet made the contact. I said before, and I repeat, if we were to make this into a book, if we could resurrect the time when Harper and Row were publishing these books, we would put a title on this study series and call it Making the Contact. If you've made the contact, or you're making the contact, you know you don't need the infinite way. You don't need Christianity, Buddhism. You don't need an organization. You don't need books, tapes, talks. That contact is the very living presence of God, and it will take you the rest of the way, however long it takes, if you take shortcuts and go down side alleys seeking other things for a while. But it will take you the rest of the way if you will continue to make that contact. It will lead you beside still waters. It will restore your soul and your soul faculties. It will prepare a place for you. So that is really what we're doing. We might call this the 1955 Making the Contact Group. It is so, so important. I can't emphasize it enough. And I don't have to. He has. So healing takes place even among those who haven't had a spiritual awareness because it isn't spiritual healing. Now here he's saying that practitioners that don't make the contact, they only say the words or repeat them in their mind until they experience a little bit of self-hypnosis and settle into a kind of a peaceful mind. That's not making the contact. And yet sometimes they'll do that and the person will heal anyway because they would have anyway. Because it's just a natural nature healing. I mean, just physically they just heal. The body just finally says, I've had this, and kicks out the disease. So then they're credited with the healing. When in fact it wasn't that spiritual power, that strange, invisible something behind that blank wall. But there's a way that you can tell, and I found this very useful, very helpful. Because when you have a spiritual healing, inwardly, it brings about not merely a change in the physical condition, it brings about a change of character, a change of their nature. In other words, if it's a spiritual healing, the person will also change spiritually. They'll develop a greater desire to know the truth. When it's a Christ healing, they'll want to know more about Christ. It brings some change in an individual. By that you may know that it is spiritual healing, or spiritual healing has taken place. So we can look for that if we're practicing this. If someone comes to us and says, I have a cold, or a flu, or even bronchitis or pneumonia, and we set to work making this contact so that when God utters its voice, the earth melts, the mental image dissolves, and we do make that contact, or we think we have, we feel like we have, well, we can watch. When the pneumonia disappears, do they have an interest in spiritual things? Has their nature changed? Have they gone from a mean and nasty disposition to being gentle and considering others' needs? Have they suddenly become interested in philanthropic enterprises? Have they asked you for some books so they can find out about the spiritual way of life? See, their nature changes. At this point of our work, I would like to say to you, do not be concerned when you are confronted with an appearance of error, whether physical, mental, moral, financial, commercial, marital, corporate, union, labor. It can be any form of discord or inharmony. Do not be too concerned whether or not you individually know the specific truth about it. Because from now on, as far as that situation is concerned, it isn't going to help you or the situation whether or not you know specific truth or any truth. Now that's pretty radical, isn't it? Up until now we thought we had to know specific truth, and we did, as we were learning the letter. Now he's stripping all of that away from us. He's saying it makes no difference at all what truth you know, or whether you know any truth at all. What does concern you is, are you at the point of development where you can get still inside and wait for that still small voice, for that spiritual impulse, that Christ? Can you do that? Whatever name you know it by, at least learn to be patient and still inside until it announces itself. until it makes itself clear within you. So that's our work. We'll be finishing this in another 8 chapters or so, which isn't too long. If we did one a week, that's only 2 months. From now on, you know what your work is. You have no other work than this, which he just described. Are you at that place of development where you can get still inside and wait for the still small voice, or the spiritual impulse, or the click, or a feeling of the presence, or a warmth, or a dropping away of burdens inwardly, or a weight falling off the shoulders, a sense of release, a sense of peace, a statement of scripture with a sense of release? In some way, this transcendental presence announces itself, lets it be known that it is there, that it is on the field, and then you may be assured of spiritual healing, because now there is an actual spiritual power operating in consciousness. And that's really what it's all about right there. We could kind of close the book now. We're done. Now, this spiritual power does not operate through taking thought. It doesn't operate through speech, through reading or hearing. The function of spiritual teaching or reading or hearing is merely to prepare your consciousness into a state of receptivity. Because this is the secret of this power on earth. It is an actual entity. It is real, folks, he says. It's more real than electricity. It's more real than an atomic bomb. It moves mountains. It raises the dead. It heals the body. It prospers business. It makes for harmonious relationships. It is a power of love, a power of life in our experience. But remember this. It is a real power, and you cannot expect much in your experience until that power is released in you. Now, when that happens, when that power is released in you, your uplifted consciousness can be the health or the demonstration of someone that's looking to you. Your consciousness can be the healing agency to them, the restoring agency. But this can only be a temporary relationship. Alright, so we know the path, we know what we have to do, we know we must make that contact. We know it's not by might nor by mind, but by my spirit. We know we have to contact that my spirit. And we have to allow it to use us. And that's pretty much what we know. It is not a simple thing, or the whole world would have achieved it. The way is straight and narrow, and few there be that enter. And it's not something that fulfills your desire, so, of course, don't have any outlines. Don't make the contact and try to... You know, I think we do that innocently. Somebody calls us and they're having financial problems. We say, sure, we'll help them. We mean it. We sit down. We get still. We make the contact and we want it to fix those financial problems for them. But that's not going to work. That's holding up an outline. Hard as it is to get away from that. That's why he gives us that just shutting our eyes and saying, no answer to this, because that should be the end of it. No more thought in that direction. Now we should just be coming, thy grace is my sufficiency, and waiting for the contact. And if the contact doesn't come, we do it again in 2 or 3 hours. And if it doesn't come, we do it again in 2 or 3 hours. And if it doesn't come, we do it again in an hour or 2 or 3. And if it doesn't come, we keep it up for 2 or 3 years, is what Joel said. If so be that the crisis so hard to contact, we keep it up for 2 or 3 years. But our life and everyone around us depends on us making that contact. Because we can't live by bread. We have to live by the word, by that contact. And so if we don't have that contact, we can set everything aside. I mean everything aside after this study and do nothing else until we make that contact. So we make that contact that His will may be done. That the will of Spirit is giving up my will in order that Thy will be done. It's not trying to function God on our plane of consciousness. It is trying to leave our plane of consciousness so that we may function on God's plane of consciousness. And that's where you get that. That's the same as saying, no answer to that. Thy will be done. Now, God's plane of consciousness is not something separate and apart from your physical life or your home or your business. The plane of God functions on our, in our life at every level. But the error is in believing that we can say to God that we want it to function in some manner we have outlined. So the main point, however, that I wished you to see tonight is this, that the spiritual power is not an activity of your human mind. Spiritual power cannot be induced by your thinking. Yeah, you can't bribe it into... You know, the human mind will try everything to stay alive, won't it? I've sat down in meditation before, and the human mind says, well, now, I'll be still if you'll do this. Yeah. The nature of the mind. The world mind. Truth may be voiced in this way as an impartation. Oh, the spiritual power cannot be induced by thinking. Right. Now, it may be voiced in this way as an impartation of that which is, and if it is accompanied by some measure of the consciousness itself, it will appear in your experience with signs following. In other words, Joel can sit up there on the platform and he can say to his audience, my peace is your protection, your safety, your security, your abundance, your supply, your health. And he can say that because he just read it 5 minutes before in a book, and everybody will get this false sense of peace. Ah, that's so calming. And yet nothing will happen as far as signs following. But Joel can go into a meditation, not having read anything, make that contact, open his eyes from that meditation in which he's still feeling that contact, and impart those same words. My peace is your health, your life, your supply, your abundance, your security, your love, your eternal, immortal life. And he'll have 2 or 3 healings out in the audience. You see how subtle this is? The difference? And so we know now, don't we, how to recognize a true teacher. If these things aren't happening, if these signs following aren't happening, I suggest you get away from him or her. Because you don't need more mental stuff, and neither do I. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of my own mental stuff and everybody else's. All I want is that contact. Contact, contact. Students believe that when you say, I have a headache, and then I say, oh, but it isn't real. God is the only power. We somehow expect that that statement is going to do something, and that's the mistake. If you can just learn that a statement of truth isn't power, you will have one of the greatest secrets that will remove you from the metaphysical world and lift you up into the spiritual world or the mystical realm, and that's what I just said. We don't want any more of that mental stuff. Phooey, I've had enough. So a statement of truth isn't power. A statement of truth isn't going to do anything. We know that. We've got it backwards, forwards, and up and down, and that was the whole purpose he gave this class, or started this work. during 1955 to try to help the students get to that place. So a statement of truth isn't going to do anything. It is the state of consciousness that does the work. It would have done the work anyway without any statement of truth. You will find as you understand this that if you like, you need never voice a statement of truth, nor write one, because none of that has healing power. If you have the consciousness of truth, then you will make your statement, and the lame man will rise. But if you haven't the consciousness, you can make all the statements from now until the next full moon, and nothing will happen. And so we see what he means. Truth is not something that you have any power over, or that you can influence, or that you can bring to bear. Truth is something that can enter your consciousness if you are still enough. Truth is something that can work through you if you are quiet enough. The one sure way to block this from happening, to prevent spirit from operating, is to be continually engaged in thoughts, even metaphysical thoughts. That just really blows my mind there, because I think of all the people engaged in knowing these truths up in the mind, and that's the one sure way to block the spirit. And I have to raise my hand, guilty, because I did that for several years. Once in a while, I'd accidentally make contact. I'm tired just thinking about it. If we at this moment were to become aware of some catastrophe, all of us, wisdom would tell us, stop talking. Stop teaching this class right now. And let's all sit back and get quiet, get still, and let the spirit come through. So, he's saying, if someone brings a discord to you, or one appears, don't rush around now trying to find some truth. Just sit down quietly. Yeah. Just sit down and close your eyes and say, no answer to that, and drop it, and make the contact. That's the whole thing right there. If it's necessary at first, remind yourself that all healing is by the grace of God, and then hold inwardly, if you like, for a few moments only, for a few moments, to some statement, such as, thy grace is my sufficiency, or thy will be done, not mine, only for a few moments, and then get quiet and be receptive and wait. Just wait. Wait patiently, because it isn't your thought now that's going to do any healing work at all. It isn't going to be anything that you physically or mentally do. It is going to be the degree of your awareness, the degree of receptivity which you hold yourself in, which will enable this invisible spirit, this transcendental presence, to announce itself. It'll be it announcing itself. You'll be just as surprised as the next person. It will announce itself. There is an inner peace which stills the storm. And don't make the mistake of believing that the spirit is going to solve the problem in the way you have worked out in your mind. Spirit doesn't work that way. So the first step in opening ourselves to the activity of the spirit must be in cleansing the temple. It doesn't matter what words you use, and he's making that pretty plain here. You can sit down and say, I know answer to this. Now I'm listening. Speak, Father. You can just close your eyes, tune it all out, and say, thy grace is my sufficiency. You can just close your eyes and open your inner ear and say nothing, think nothing. You can say this here. I'm coming to the Spirit that the pure harmony of God may be revealed, and that my will not be done, but thy will be done. And then in that openness you will find that there is a realm right here on earth where heaven operates. I just love that. I'd like to put that on my wall up here in gold letters. There is a realm right here on earth where heaven operates. And what is that realm, ladies and gentlemen? It's the realm of silence. No thought. So it doesn't matter what words you use to settle yourself down. It doesn't matter. You could say, Jimmy, crack corn and I don't care, and close your eyes and make the contact. The words are not important at all. And it's not important to say, speak, Father, thy servant heareth. It's important that you have that attitude. Not the words, speak, Father, thy servant heareth, but the attitude of listening, of being humble before the Lord, of being receptive, quiet, willing to be used by the Spirit, by the infinite Spirit of the living God. It's important that you have that attitude. That's why you can close your eyes and have that attitude without any words or thoughts coming in there to help you calm down. We may not be at that place right now, and that's okay. If you're not at that place, by all means, use the words and the thoughts to help yourself center down. But only for a few moments, as quick as you can, bring yourself to that attitude of waiting, of listening, of being receptive, of being used, of being bent to His will. Be pliable. Okay? Now, as time goes on, and you make that contact, and you learn how to be receptive on a pretty consistent basis, not every time, but almost every time, well, then the time will come when you no longer need the words or the thoughts because you know how to have the attitude. And you'll be able to have the attitude with just blinking your eyes or just smiling because you'll be that receptivity. But we're not there yet. We have to start somewhere. So he's given you a couple little things that you can use to quickly calm yourself down for a few moments, and then get to the place of waiting. And if you reach that place of stillness, of waiting, and it doesn't have to be perfect, absolutely no sound, absolute 0 point. No, it just has to be a listening. Sometimes he says thoughts are still going on, and you're free to say, I'm not interested in that, and continue to wait, and it'll still come. You don't have to be perfect stillness, like a vacuum in space. You just have to be your very best vacuum. And it'll still come, even sometimes while thoughts are dancing in the background. You can still make that contact. And so when you do, you discover a realm opens up right here on earth where heaven operates. Because heaven and earth are one. The time must come when the kingdom of heaven is revealed right here on earth. That can be here and now, or at any given moment, because it isn't a worldwide experience. It's an individual experience that will come to each of you. Heaven can just as well function on earth as it functions in heaven. Now that paragraph or two we just read is food for a, well, it's a cone, I can feel it. The moment we give up the idea of having God do our will, we begin to function and to live in God's will, and we learn that God's will is good, universal good. So we are not seeking God or spiritual power to do our will. We are surrendering our will that we may be used by God's power. Not my will, but thy will be done is the very first step in spiritual wisdom. So watch this when you meditate, he says. Don't have any desires that you wish God to fulfill. Go to the center of your being, wanting to function on God's level, and let God raise you to that level of life. You will still be engaged with homes and families and business, but more harmoniously, more joyously, more successfully, and more peacefully. Now, this 9 months of our work in this class, all of us, has brought us to the place where you should be ready, in the face of any circumstance or condition that confronts you, to stop taking thought about it, to sit back and be receptive to God's thought about it. That is the point toward which we have been working since this work began with the Chicago series, the Seattle series, and now this Kailua series. Every step has been leading to the place where, whether or not you attain it today, it is reaching that point in consciousness where, when you are confronted with any situation, your own, your family's, your patients, or students, you can sit down without any preconceived thought or without any knowing any truth. Just sit back quietly and reassure yourself with a couple of these gentle scriptural statements, such as not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, or thy grace is my sufficiency in all things, or thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Something gentle, something soft, something reassuring of that nature, and then gradually get still. Open the inner ear so that you can hear the still small voice, even though you may not hear it audibly. But you will be receptive and responsive, and you will feel it. You'll be aware of it. And then with that warmth comes, or the surge, or that release, you will know, ah, thank you, Father. The Father is on the field. And then relax and go about your business. That's it. That's where he's trying to bring the entire student body of the Infinite Way, and in particular this group at his house, and any that are hearing these tapes or reading this book, which is all of us. And he was trying to do that, bring everyone from the letter to the spirit. And of course, he can't do that. He can point the way so that you can say, ah, now I see what I have to do. Ah, now I know what I've been missing. Oh, now I know why it hasn't been working. I've been stuck on the mental. But still, making that next step to the spiritual is something each of us individually will have to do in the quiet of our home, our bedroom, our office, even the bathroom if we can't get alone anywhere else. We have to do it somewhere, make this transition from the mind to the spirit. And that's the whole purpose of this work since he began it in Chicago. So do you not see that unless this teaching is presented at this level where you first give the students the letter of truth, the correct letter of truth, and then gradually, through spiritual impartation, bring them to where they themselves can feel and experience the spiritual power, if that doesn't happen this way, then again this wonderful thing that we are witnessing these many years will disappear from off the face of the earth, because it cannot be taught by books or through the mind. We're kind of at a critical place here. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think we're always at that critical place. Is this going to disappear off the face of the earth? Or are there going to be enough of us to find it, to continue it? Is this vision reachable, that we can have a circle of Christhood, a circle of people who are making this contact? Or is it just not reachable in this age? I don't know. We're at a turning point. We're at that second generation. It's either going to disappear off this earth after we pass, or, like he has wanted to see happen, the next generation will be born into this. That will be the case if we can establish that circle of Christhood. Now, it is possible that students, correctly taught, can make use of books and recordings and meditation to the opening of that spiritual power within them. But the greatest value that we can be to this world is in our own spiritual development. Why? Because when they can make contact with us, and we're making the contact, they can grow in 1 year what would take them 10 years with just the books. He says, I've actually seen it. We can be a greater help to them in 1 year than the books alone would be in 10 years. He's seen that people who have been studying 10, 20, 30 years have not made one single advance in the line of achieving spiritual awareness or inner grace. That's pretty pitiful, really. And I fall in that middle one, that 20 there, of not making that contact. Well, that's not entirely true. Making it accidentally some of the time, but like metaphysicians the world over, for the most part, relying on statements of truth, and then occasionally accidentally making that contact and seeing the fruits and feeling, I've got it now. Yeah, right. So we can spend 10, 20, or 30 years and make not make one single advance by just reading the books and listening to the talks. However, he says, after a very few months of personal contact, that Christ can begin to do healing work through a person when all the years before it couldn't. So you may hand books to someone and watch them struggle for 10 years without achieving anything. No power, no presence. On the other hand, if you are making the contact and they have contact with you, then they can skip those 10 or 20 or 30 years and be lifted up in a few months or a year or two. Which is the whole reason why I felt the need to make these Kailua study talks. Because I look across the world and I am in contact with people all over the world. And it comes back to me, what happened to the infinite way? Where did it go? Why are people not making contact? Why are people not showing it forth in signs following? Why are there not 50 practitioners that you can call? Why is there not the circle of Christhood? What is going on? And it comes back to me. They're not making contact. They're relying on words, statements. So then the question presents itself, what can be done? What can be done? I've tried to make talks and they go over people's heads, I guess. They're not getting it. I don't know what it is. And so along comes this 1955 Kailua study series and drops in my lap. And I feel, aha, here it is, the exact way, the exact course of action to go from the letter to the spirit. So if I can make these talks and send those out worldwide, maybe it won't disappear from the earth again. And so here I am talking, and I hope you take it serious. So, we now are living by the word. We're not living by forms. We're not living by books or tapes. We can enjoy them. We can read a little bit and calm down. But from now on, we know we're not living by books or recordings. We're living by the Word of God. Eventually, the whole world will have to learn to live without books and without teachers, because Christ is the reality within. So the secret of harmonious living is that God is the soul of this universe, and there is nothing in this world destructive to another thing. Now, there are in human experience, yes, until we, through grace, through this inner realization, come to that place of realization. So, he said that in several places, and I wish more people had seen it. And I'll repeat it here again. To say the statement that there is no power in this problem, and you can name your problem, whether it's government or whether it's a plague, or whether it's the HIV virus, or whether it's the downturn in the economy worldwide, or whether it's the epidemic of flu that's going around, or whether it's the disgruntled relationships between Pakistan and India. To say there is no power in this, there is no power in this, there is no power in this. This is world mind, and it has no power. It was not created by God. It's nothing. It's blah, 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 blah. That's an incomplete statement, Joel says, and I have realized. The complete statement is, this has no power in the presence of Christ. It has no power when the contact with omnipotence is made. But, he says, before that realization takes place, oh yes siree, it sure does have power. So there's a realization that has to take place, and then it has no power. In the presence of omnipotence, there is no other power. Now, that's not a statement, is it? That's an experience. So it's an experience, isn't it? Ah, we see that now. Now we see it. It's not enough to declare there's no power in this, God is omnipotence. That's why we've been declaring that, and the thing is just destroying us at the same time. Now we understand it's an experience. Realization is an experience, isn't it? We make the actual contact with omnipotence. Then this other puny thing appearing to be a power is dissolved. In the presence of the actual omnipotence itself, this is not a power. In that experience, that's a truth. But to walk around just declaring the words is not truth. So we see the difference, right? Now we know we can't walk around and say, well, this isn't a power, that's not a power, well, that's not a power, and be destroyed by the very thing we're claiming has no power. Now we know we have to make this contact over and over, where we can sit down and we can say, well, this is certainly appearing to be a power, but there's no answer out there, so let me drop it, and let me contact the power within. Then we contact that power, we have the experience of omnipotence flowing through us, and when we open our eyes, this other image has dissolved. Then we can say we're knowing the truth, and not until then. Which is the same thing he's saying here when he says, merely stating that God is love and God is the soul will not enable us to swallow poison without any harm. But attaining this grace, this inner realization, will show you what the miracles really are that take place when heaven is experienced on earth. You can say when heaven is experienced on earth, when you have an experience of omnipotence, when you make the contact, when the peace descends, when the presence is upon you, and so on and so forth. These are all words that we color an inner experience that takes place in a moment of silence. Let's not use any words to color it. Let's have the experience. What do you say? Our work in the message of the Infinite Way has two departments, the correct letter and then making the contact. Once we know the correct letter so that we can begin to sit back and be quiet and be still, that then is the moment of enunciation or conception of the Christ within us. So that's another way to say it. The experience of omnipotence, the peace descending, the Spirit is upon you, or the conception of the Christ within. Then in a short period following that will come the birth itself, the actual experience of Christ governing our lives. So in other words, if you've really, really, really made the contact, if you've gotten to the place where you're beyond words and thoughts, you've attained the stillness, you have made the contact, it's a real spiritual release, there will be signs following. And won't you know it, you'll be a practitioner, whether you set out to be or not. Students of the Infinite Way, you must not fool yourselves into believing that wonderful statements of truth will do miracles, or that books will do miracles. The teaching is an inner realization of these truths. That's what performs the miracles. It's an actual experience of truth. It's legitimate to use the letter of truth to bring you into an inner stillness, but then you must have that experience. That's the only place it can take place. All right, he's hammering this home and hammering it home, and perhaps we need it. Perhaps we're hard shells. It is only a matter of sitting quietly until that inner grace is achieved, and it can be achieved by anyone who knows that correct letter. This place where I stand is holy ground. With that realization, we can sit and be patient until the experience comes. Do you see that? Do you see it? Do you see it? Do you see it? Are you doing it? Are you living it? Are you practicing it? Is this not your time? You have too much to do out here, but you intend on coming back to this later when you're 65. Well, that's perfectly legitimate too. I mean, nobody says you have to do this. Problem is, you're going to have a little bit of problems along the way, probably. And maybe not. Maybe you'll have a total harmonious life, and then you can take out your slippers and your pipe, or your slippers and your knitting, and take this up again when you're 65 or 70. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Do what you need to do. I need to do it now. All right. We must first of all develop our own spiritual capacities and endowments to that point where we can bring healing, harmony, wholeness to others. First in this small individual way and later in the larger ways. And then we must also impart it to others. So there's what he'd like to see us do. But, you know, we use these words, he uses these words, spiritual, your spiritual capacity, your spiritual endowment, your spiritual attainment, your spiritual achievement. And now we're finding out all that's just not correct. You have to use some kind of words. So those are the words we use. But it's not at all correct. We're finding the more we realize how much we're nothing and sit still and wait, this other something, this spiritual presence, can use us. So it's always the spiritual presence, right? It's never going to be us. It's going to be the spiritual presence. And he says, thank you, thank you, thank you. So he's done his work. I've done my work. If you practicing this 12 times a day or as many times as you are able, you've done your work. And now it's just a matter of time. It could be, like he said, as long as 2 or 3 years. It could be like it was for him, 8 months. It could be that you've accidentally made that contact like I have, and you're learning to do it on a consistent basis, almost at will, but not quite. I don't know. This is all in God's hands and the Spirit within you, the presence within you, the Christ within you, in the eye of your being. It's all there, in the blueprint there. And so I can't say what it's going to be. But I can say, without it, you're nothing. Without it, I'm nothing. Without it, this life isn't worth living at all. Because we're just play acting. And it gets pretty tiring. But with it, we can be of some value to this universe, to this world, to the people, the plants, the animals, to the creation of the Father. And that, to me, makes it all worth it. I don't care about having $1 million. The only reason I care about an income is because it's annoying. The only reason I'd like to have, or the only reason I enjoy seeing enough coming in on a monthly basis to meet all my bills is so I can put them in the background and don't have to think about them. So I can have my mind on making this contact. That's the only value to that. So if you were to give me $1 million, would I be happy? Yes, but not for $1 million. That would just be, so now I can hire somebody to take care of these bills, and I don't have to think about them at all. So thank you, yes, for that freedom. Now I can devote all of my time to this. That would be the value of that. It wouldn't be, oh my goodness, now I can have a house. I have a house. Oh, I can have a Lamborghini. What the heck would I do with one? I'm not even going to drive it. Most of the time I'm meditating. Oh, I can live by the water. Well, I've done that. I can live by the mountains. I'm doing that. Oh, I can travel around the world. I've been everywhere I've ever wanted to go. Oh, well, I don't need clothes. I got them. I can buy diamonds. I got them on my finger. There's nothing I need except this time to spend in meditation making that contact. So, I am grateful for the ability every month to be able to, by about the middle of the month, pay the last bill and then be done with that. I don't have to look at it again for 2 whole weeks, and I can get still and I can get quiet and have my mind totally on making that contact, which I try to do the first 2 weeks too. And I don't want you to get the impression I only do this 2 weeks out of the month. What I'm trying to say is the first 2 weeks there's things to do. I have to gather up these bills. I have to pay them. I have to pay some online. I have to mail some out. I have to make phone calls. I have work to do, and so on and so forth. Well, I don't know how I got off on that tangent, but the whole point of this is to make that contact. Not to know about omnipotence, but to contact omnipotence. Not to know about omnipresence, but to feel that omnipresence. Not to read or think about omniscience, but to receive impartations from omniscience. So we're moving to a place where we're contacting that infinite invisible. And that's what will change our lives. And that's what will change the universe. Oh, that's how I got on that tangent. That's the only value of this to me, is being of some use to the universe, to the Father, and to the Father's creation. That's where I started. Okay. So, let's see if there's anything else. Let me be still for a moment. We're moving into the Christmas season. Don't forget that you have nothing to give. But by making this contact and letting that spirit pour out onto the face of the earth, this is what you have to give. What you have to give is your nothingness, your emptiness, your receptivity. Don't forget that the birth of the Christ takes place in the manger of your consciousness. Before that birth takes place, it's filled up with a lot of thoughts and words, statements of truth. These are the animals that make up the manger. It's not a very clean place, is it? Yet it's the very place that Christ is born, in that moment, on that night that you make yourself wait upon the Lord, that you become still. That's the very place that Christ is born. And you become a witness. So prepare yourself for the real Christmas. That in which you witness the birth of Christ in the manger of your consciousness. And then watch it flow forth as the many gifts to a starving, hurting, suffering universe that's starving for the very Christ that you have to give it. This Christmas, you be the answer that the universe has sought. This Christmas, you be the invisible Christ.